Acclaimed author and political activist Ivan Klima has been through some of the most disruptive and horrifying events in modern history. In his memoir, My Crazy Century, he chronicles, among other things, his internment in a Jewish ghetto, the machinations of communist rule in Czechoslovakia, the Prague Spring of 1968, the Velvet Revolution of 1989, and how he strived for personal and political freedom. It's published by Grove Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome Ivan Klima to our program today. Hello.
Thank you for the invitation. Hello.
You note that you've spent a large portion of your life in a society that wasn't free. How did you define personal and political freedom while you were living under two totalitarian regimes?
There are many definitions, and for me it's freedom of expression on the first place, because I'm a writer, and of course freedom of traveling, which was for me something which I really estimated after the World War Revolution, because I couldn't travel for nearly 20 years entirely. We were closed, not in the prison, but we were closed in the small country.
Well, were you, was information available about what was going on in other parts of the world? Because there was censorship in Czechoslovakia.
Of course, officially it was censorship. But because we are just on the frontiers with the West countries, so we could listen to Radio Free Europe, which was widely listened by many people, so we had enough information.
Now, during World War II, the Nazis invaded Czechoslovakia. Actually, there were two takeovers of Czechoslovakia. The first was the Sudetenland, and then, but you didn't live there.
No, I lived the whole life in Prague.
So how soon after the Nazis arrived was your family targeted?
Very soon, very soon. My relatives were very active in politics, so they were hijacked, and they were arrested very soon, and they were executed just in 1941. And we were persecuted from the very beginning as Jewish. And by chance, I went to Theresienstadt, which was a concentration or so-called ghetto, but it was in reality a normal concentration camp. So I went there by first transport, which happened in December 1941.
How old were you?
I was just 10 years old. And I spent there the rest of the war, which was the only reason why I survived, because children in my age went to the gas chambers always in Auschwitz. Sorry.
Well, were you aware that you were even Jewish when you were a kid?
Wasn't that the sort of thing
that a lot of families in Hungary, in Poland, in Czechoslovakia even try to keep hidden from their children?
So
or from the rest of the world?
No, I think that my parents were totally not involved in any Jewish way of life. They were not, they had no religion at all. So I had no idea that I am Jewish.
And then you had a couple of uncles who were members of the Communist Party, which of course must have made the situation even a little worse.
Yes, it made it. They were executed. Both my uncles were executed in 1941.
Was there any possibility of your family escaping?
Yes, it was. My father, he was quite well-known technician, and he had job in Switzerland already, and he only waited for some permits for his mother. And that's the reason why we missed the opportunity to leave, and then we had to stay, and with all connections, I can say, is it?
It was just too late. You're right that although German occupation came as a shock to a significant portion of Czech society, it was also welcomed by many people. What was the attraction of fascism to some people in Prague and other parts of Czechoslovakia? After all, the country had only achieved independence a few decades earlier, so yes. It probably didn't have a strong nationalist sensibility.
So it's not so simply. Sorry. we had a great German minority in our country. It was about 3 million real Germans.
And were they speaking German?
And they spoke German. It was
like Kafka spoke German,
for example, but many others, and mostly in so-called Sudetenland, it means close to frontiers with Austria and with Germany. So they were mostly German population. And it proves that they were enthusiastically welcome Hitler, and there are some movies about it, some photos, and there are really thousands of people who were saluting Hitler.
Well, was it because anti-Semitism was powerful, or were there other reasons that Hitler was welcomed? I mean, you're saying that in some cases, of course, it was just Germans being proud of the fact that Germany was now a very powerful nation.
For Germans, they were used that the German language was the most important for centuries. And now, from the 1918, when it was established, a free democratic Czech Republic, so the German was a second language, not the first one. So they suffered by this losing this primarily.
How aware were you of what was happening around you? Because you write about people simply disappearing, and I was wondering how that was explained to you.
Probably not explained, and I prefer not to ask. Anyway,
Even then, you were aware that this was a dangerous situation?
That I was quite well aware. But we believed that the people who disappeared were not killed, which only after the war I found that they were killed, all of them.
Did you need to believe that to keep going?
Sorry?
Did you need to believe that just to keep going?
I believe that in this age, a person believes that everything will be
everything
with
a
happy
out.
End like in fairy tale, because I was educated on fairy tales.
Your father joined an underground communist cell while you were in Terezin.
Yes.
Wasn't that very dangerous to do?
I'm sure it was very dangerous. Anyway, it wasn't discovered. And then he was a specialist, a real specialist in his profession. He was sent not in transport, but the three specialists were sent to another concentration camp in some special group, but in the camp, which should do something anyway, because it was in 1944, so Nazis were withdrawing. When he came back from Poland, he said they had only one task, to prepare shortwave radio for SS, because they should like the assessment to understand how far is front and so.
Well, he because of what he could do, he escaped the gas chambers while so many others were sent there. What did your family do after the war?
So we came back. At the first moment, we were waiting if the father survived or not, because we had no message from him, no knowledge about his fate. When he came, so it was sometime at the end of May 1945, so we were very happy. We got back our flat. It was very small, two rooms and small kitchen. And we had the feeling that we are a very lucky person, because the whole family survived, which was another exception.
And I'm sure you also welcomed the communists taking power, because there had been communists in your family, and on top of it all, they were the enemies of the Nazis.
Yes, of course, because they were executed. The whole family, this communist part of the family, with one exception of my aunt, who escaped to the Soviet Union, so they were beheaded.
So you joined the Communist Party at what age?
I was, I guess, 17.
And then you became quickly disillusioned. What led to the disillusionment?
There are more reasons. So first thing was, my father was arrested in 1953 by communist regime.
What had he done to deserve that?
He was a member of intelligentsia, and he led some special body of specialists in his field, and it was probably some envy from people below. So he was accused for espionage, but he was arrested just 3 weeks after Stalin's death, and the regime started to change very quickly. So instead of 20 years, he got 18 months. And so he was released rather soon, and it was for him in some way for the whole family very healthy that we started to understand what it's for kind for regime the communism is.
I'm speaking to Ivan Klima. He's written a memoir called My Crazy Century. You write of the Nazis and the Soviets that, I'm quoting, far too many intellectuals were in the service of a fanatical idea that contradicted and betrayed everything humanity had thus far achieved. Why do you think so many intelligent people, or at least educated people, went along with these systems which worked against them?
I think that the generation of my parents were very much touched by the big economical crisis in the 30s. And they believed that the communist regime or socialism will evade this crisis. That was probably the main reason, and that was, as many utopian ideas, they are in some way attractive if they are only in the imagination. In the reality, utopia is a catastrophe because it cannot be realized.
But many remained loyal even after it became apparent that these systems were just horrific. I mean, that communism presents itself as a liberating force, and yet, in fact, you say all barbaric and unparalleled murder or theft usually occurs in the name of the good, of morality, or of reason.
Yes, it's a kind of fanatism, and fanatism is shared by many people because it's attractive. They have wonderful promising, and so on. So it was attractive as a utopian idea. When it was realized, so it was catastrophe.
My guest is Ivan Klima, who is the author of over 30 plays, essay collections, and novels, including Waiting for the Dark, Waiting for the Light, No Saints or Angels, The Ultimate Intimacy, and Lovers for a Day, which were all New York Times notable books of the year, as well as Love and Garbage. My Crazy Century is his latest book, which has won the Magnesia Literary Award for nonfiction. It is published in this country by Grove Press, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Ivan Klima. His latest book is a memoir called My Crazy Century. It is published by Grove Press. And this also includes a collection of essays at the end of the book. And in them, you wonder if it were not for Nazism, would people like Adolf Eichmann and Rudolf Hess have gone through life as honest, respectable people who committed no crimes? This is, of course, an unanswerable question, but what conditions or people allow that kind of evil to emerge?
It's always some kind of totalitarian system which offers the opportunity of some power. And there are some people who are attracted by power, and there are they offer them to misuse this power. And
for some people, it's just a job, and they don't even think about the implications. Isn't that what the banality of evil was all about?
Yes, it's something which I cannot imagine, and of course not everybody is prepared to do something like that, but it was because I really lived for many years in some kind of totalitarian system, and there are enough people who are prepared to be misused and to use the feeling of limitless power, which is very attractive for many people.
Well, when you talk to people who you thought were intelligent and would understand these things, but were part of the system, how did they explain themselves?
Mostly they had a very good intention. They were misused. They personally didn't commit anything. That is even for many SS men, they said, or mostly their children proclaimed, yes, father or grandpa, they were in SS, but they didn't do anything.
Those other people.
Yes. So that's...
You write that the Communist Party leaders constantly warned of the threats from imperialist international reactionaries. They recommended the remnants of defeated bourgeoisie and the various deviationists and saboteurs, but in reality, they were much more afraid of those in whose name they repeatedly claimed to rule, the workers, farmers, and even the members of their own party.
That's
probably what's happening right now in China, don't you think, or in North Korea?
I'm nearly sure, but I wasn't there, so it's very difficult for me to judge. Anyway, it something like that happens in each totalitarian system. It has its rules, and they are more or less followed, these rules.
And people go along with the idea that there's this threat from the outside. And we have to all gather together.
Yes, it's the idea which is repeated, and there are some people, mostly the uneducated people, who are prepared to believe it.
Considering what happened in your family, why did you join the military in 1953?
I didn't join military. It was obligatory in
our
country.
You were drafted?
And I was not. I didn't have normal military service. I was only for 1 month, and the rest we have few hours each week, some theory during my university studies. So I, more or less, I never was in the normal service as an army man.
How much of a presence did the Russians have? Did the Soviet Union have in the world that you were living in?
You are asking about the Soviet influence?
Well, for example, when you were in the military, were there Soviet soldiers there as well?
No. It was mostly Czech officers. But they were more or less from distance led entirely by the Soviet army leaders.
And then there's a whole matter of art. It's my sense that some of the satellite nations were allowed a little more freedom to their artists than the people who lived in the Soviet Union.
Maybe it differs from time to time. There were time of more freedom in Poland than in Hungary after the Hungarian Revolution. And it was the same in our country in the late 60s.
And that's what led to the Prague Spring.
It was because I must say that our Communist Party was mostly intellectuals who were really cheated during the 30s and then found what does it mean, the communism. So they really became so-called opportunists or revisionists and so on. It means they tried to put together or join democracy and socialism, which is, of course, it's a utopia.
Norman Manya, who is from
Romania,
he talks about a time when Ceausescu said he was eliminating censorship and you could write whatever you wanted. And he said that was the most dangerous time because when there were rules, you knew just how far you could go. But when there were no rules, then you could do something that would get you in a lot of trouble.
So in our country, it was different. I don't know about anybody who was persecuted because something was has written or published. So there were no real punishment for any of intellectuals.
Well, were you publishing at the time?
I was publishing for in the 60s, yes. In 70s, I was banned till the end of this puppet regime installed by after the Soviet occupation in 68.
Where were you when the Soviets invaded?
I was in London by chance. The whole family, with exception of my very small daughter, was out of the country. My wife with my son, they were in Israel by chance to work in some kibbutz. And I was also by chance invited to London. So I was in London. But the whole family, it's interesting, my father was in Switzerland, my brother was in England. The whole family was Jewish. And the whole family came back, which probably is the only family who completely came back from abroad to the stupid regime.
Because many writers and artists decided to live in exile after 1968.
Yes, but on the other hand, many of them stayed. I had such a... Because we were really tried to oppose the regime since the middle of 60s. So I had even feeling of duty to come back because most of my friends stayed in Czechoslovakia.
Were you targeted when you went back?
I was interrogated anyway, and I lost any kind to get a job in any intellectual job. So I was allowed only to work as a worker. But on the other hand, because I was in that time mostly as a dramatist, I was widely put on the stage abroad in the West, so I succeeded to survive on my foreign royalty, which more or less the regime tried to confiscate it. But when somebody came from the West and brought me money in the cash, so I could change it as an entirely anonymous person in the bank for Czech crown, and I could survive on my foreign royalties.
I'm speaking with author and political activist Ivan Klima about his life under two totalitarian regimes. He's written a memoir with some additional essays as well called My Crazy Century. Well, so there you were. Your work was banned. You had to work at what kind of factory job or an office job?
I worked as a during the landscaping as a helper of landscaper for some months. Then I work in the hospital, but most or less I survived of my foreign royalty. So I worked in the normal job only for a few months altogether.
Well, you also worked as a driver, didn't you?
Things like that. Driver, not. It was not a job. I was a private driver with my car.
Now, did this have an effect on the kinds of things you were writing?
It offered me a lot of free time for writing because I had no job, no really job, And I, as I mentioned, I could survive on my foreign royalties. So I had a lot of free time because I couldn't get a normal job. So a lot of intellectuals are working in some publishing house or in some newspaper or magazines. So it's impossible entirely to get such kind of job. So I was sitting at home, I was writing. So most of my books were written just in these 20 years when I couldn't work.
But wasn't there the Samizdat system that was also in the Soviet Union where works were just passed from one person to another?
Yes, it was very well functioned in our country since 72, and I was one of the organizers of this Samizdat. It started in our flat with so-called readings. It means that one author came, because nearly everybody was banned in the beginning of 70s. So some of the writers came and they read for the audience, between 40 and 50 people, and he read something new what he just finished. So it functioned this way maybe 1.5 years, and then we started to copy it really on normal typewriter, because it, everything else was forbidden. But to make copies on typewriter, it was, even in this law, is mentioned that it's allowed. It was a special paragraph that writer is allowed to type copies for information of his friends and getting criticism. It was a real special paragraph in the law.
Luckily there was, but I assume yes. Also there were, you were visited by the secret police over the course of your life or others. Did they just leave you alone, or did they threaten you with prison?
Yes, threatened, and they interrogated me, but they never arrested me. But I should like to stress that no one of my colleagues were arrested.
Well, you write about the difference between external and internal freedom. Is it possible to have one without the other?
No, more or less, yes. You can save your internal freedom, which is sometimes more difficult, because to be entirely free in your way of thinking is not so easy, because most of people are influenced by some ideology and so on.
How did you become friends with Philip Roth? You've said that you don't think any other author has written with such understanding and earnestness about the oppressive fate of Czech writers and Czech culture as Roth. How did he become so knowledgeable?
I invited a lot of my American colleagues. I was visited by Arthur Miller, by John Updike, because it was very easy explanation. On one side, I was more or less translated and well known, and the second reason was that I could speak quite fluently English. Now it's worse because 1969-70 I was teaching in Ann Arbor, so I have fresh knowledge of English now. It's ever evaporating.
You were in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, after the fall of communism, Czechoslovakia split up. Were you surprised?
No, in some way I didn't expect it. Anyway, I found it now that it was quite healthy.
You think it was a good
because
thing?
Because we had nearly nothing common in the history, because they were always, their history was connected with Hungary, and our history rather with Austrian Empire. So we were put together mostly because our languages are nearly the same, very close.
This is the same sort of thing that happened with Yugoslavia, even though the cultures were so different,
yes.
The languages were similar.
Yes, it's very similar, yes.
And Slovakia remained a little closer in sentiment to the older communist system. For Prague being in the Czech Republic meant that there would be more changes?
I don't think they are craving for communism, even not in Slovakia. So,
Ivan Klima will be giving a reading and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Czech Center. That's at 321 East 73rd Street between 1st and 2nd Avenues. His book, My Crazy Century, a memoir, is published by Grove Press. And I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on our show.
Thank you very much for the invitation.